thanks to our sponsor, AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 369. Today, AC and CJ are going to talk about Microsoft's Q2 earnings and the rest of the news, recorded live July the 23rd, 2020. This episode is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. Back to the show. Mr. Vacationing Chris Johnson, how are you doing today?
I'm so relaxed.
Yet you got up nice and early and you're doing a podcast with me here at 8 o'clock your time. So I appreciate you getting up early and doing this in your... early your time today.
Yeah, no worries. Well, it's I've got to do the right thing, don't I? I've got to. I'm only kidding.
If only more people would do that in this world.
Well, that's true. No, it's nice. It's nice. Actually, my son has to. He's doing some school stuff over the summer holidays, doing some advanced math stuff, and so he's got to get up and be online anyway. Mm. And so it's not like I'm having to drag myself kicking and screaming out of bed to talk to you.
Yeah. So he's doing school, online school right now. That's just like a getting ahead. That's nothing like for the current times, but I get you and I have both been, as just part of our little, like, you know, catching up with each other. You and I are affected by all the stuff of the pandemic and school districts trying to figure out what they're going to do going forward.
Oh yeah.
Is the setup that he's doing now, is this like what your schools are going to be doing coming into this next school year?
God, your guess is as good as mine, mate.
from what I've seen in the news too, in many of the school districts, I mean, that's kind of how they're all like, we think so.
I'm really not sure. Possibly. Yeah, it's been okay, but they're going 100% online here starting in September when they go back to school. So yeah, they've been kind of doing this for a while already. So I don't think much will change from that perspective for us, but you know, we'll have to see. It seems to change weekly. But our kids have been doing all right at it. But it, you know, it's just the back and forth and not really knowing what's going to happen with the school year, I think, is pissing most people off.
Yeah. I saw you mentioned that you guys went full online for the first part. Is that a full school year thing, or is that a, we're going to start this way and it's going to be like this until X amount of time and then we'll figure it out? Or
it's going to start this way. I don't know if they're saying for the whole year, but I expect for like the first semester or whatever.
We've been going through a similar thing. We've been trying to, our school district has been trying to figure out what they were going to do. And they gave everybody the option. They gave everybody a couple different options, and I'm not going to go through all the details of it and bore everybody, but they gave everybody a couple different options for what we could do. It was really broke down to three things: in-person school, like normal, but with a bunch of stuff that they're going to modify for people that are coming in school; distance learning, which basically is virtual school, but it's the same teacher, same curriculum; or you could effectively withdraw and sign up for something called Florida Virtual School, FLVS, where you did everything completely remote. And there were other flavors that are available for the school district and other options, but just keeping it simple. And then they went through the whole thing. Are we going to delay the school year or not? And they ultimately decided to delay it. our family decided to just withdraw both of our kids. So I have a rising sixth grader and a rising 10th grader. And we're just going to do virtual school for the entire school year, this coming school year. And just said, you know what? There was too much unknown and stuff that was going on around us. And I was like, you know, this is just going to be, let's just bite the bullet, deal with it for 1 year. Whatever happens, happens, but it doesn't impact us. And we'll just kind of roll with that. So,
yeah, no, it gives you a bit of certainty. Mm-hmm. Speaking of certainty, it also gives Slack and Teams a bit of certainty around their usage levels, you know, because we saw things really spike when this started taking off with Teams and Slack. And Zoom, not Slack, I meant Zoom. And, you know, we've all been talking about, well, what happens when people start going back to school and all that, the usage levels will start dropping. Yes, they probably will, but they're going to stay elevated for a really long time, if not forever, right? Mm-hmm. Based on things like this, and also companies being like, well, okay, maybe we don't need our offices anymore in this location, so there'll be a lot more virtual meetings and all that sort of stuff.
It's all going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, it's for the school year coming up, I'm finding it very interesting watching the national news in the United States and seeing what different schools are doing, what school districts are doing, from big schools to there's a political side to it as well. But just seeing all the different decisions they're going through, I mean, it's fascinating to see how things are all going to work out. So everybody's decision is going to be a little bit different, and you got to make the right decision for what's good for you and your family.
Yeah.
I'm relieved that now our decision is made. We're moving forward, and it's like, okay, I can put that aside and kind of get back to my work life and make sure kids are set up for school. And, you know, there's not so much this like unknown kind of floating around. So, and like you said, I mean, it helps people, you know, be able to plan for stuff, not just Teams and Zoom and for capacity planning it, you know. So at any rate, yeah, personal stuff.
My wife brought up a good point last night. She said, I'm glad that the, I think it was the state, levied an education technology tax raise. Some sort of levy on us a while back. And she was like, I bet they're glad they did that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's all these people saying, well, they're not going back to school. Does that mean they get my tax back? I was like, well, no, online costs a lot too.
Yeah, it doesn't just mean all of a sudden something is free. I mean, there's stuff that's there, but just because you may not be using it doesn't mean that
exactly
taxes, blah, blah, blah. But it's been I wanted to make sure that this show wasn't a long show today because you are on vacation and you may end up and you're recording a show here. Although, you know, thankfully it's a audio show and not a video show for you, but yeah, I'm
no,
just kidding.
No joke.
You don't look that scruffy.
I'm feeling pretty scruffy.
Well, you look scruffy, but anyway.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I'm just messing with you. But yeah, so let's keep the show kind of on topic and we'll do the news, kind of do a quick little news wrap up here and try and go on the shorter side. Although we say that, I'm sure we're going to go long, but.
Well, some good stuff to get through.
Yeah, there's been some news here and it's some stories that are going to be fun to watch over the coming months or maybe even years. So first up, Microsoft released their quarterly earnings yesterday afternoon, their Q4 earnings afternoon, and they had another really good quarter.
They certainly did. They certainly blew it out of the water yet again. And it's pretty epic. Do you want to, before we get into this, let's hear from one of our awesome sponsors.
This episode is sponsored by Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. This podcast is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. And now, back to the show. Look at that. My eagerness to try and get through our podcast today at a reasonable clip. I totally forgot that we do little pauses to make sure that the person that helps us produce the show, they know when we're going to try and put an ad spot in. So I appreciate you calling me out, as I'm usually the one that does this. Even in my notes, it even says, hey, we're doing a call out here. And I totally screwed that up. So,
no, yes. It was fine.
Nah, I screwed up.
I'm here for you, man.
These quarterly earnings are interesting that we're running through right now. Microsoft, we'll talk about this one, but other ones too, because this is the first quarter that is fully the pandemic quarter, right?
Yep.
So in seeing like what the impact of what this is has had on the different businesses. For Microsoft, this is affecting them as well, just like everybody. Well, it affects different companies in different ways. This was not an impact enough to them to where it was going to significantly or negatively impact their quarter. They had revenues, Q4 revenues. So this is Q2 calendar, but Microsoft's fiscal is split fiscal to the calendar. So it's like their fiscal year starts on July the 1st. So these are numbers reporting from, what is it, April, May, and June, which is their Q4. Strong Q4, revenues of $38 billion, $1.46 a share. And their commercial cloud metric was $14.3 billion, which was up 30% from the same quarter year over year the previous year. That's
crazy.
It's impressive. It's quite impressive.
Isn't it impressive? Some of these numbers are fantastic as well. So Office 365 commercial is up 19%. Mm-hmm. That is an incredible result, really. I mean, as 365 becomes more ubiquitous and more, you know, penetrated in the market, right, that number will slowly come down, right, unless they find new commercial markets that they're not strong in. So, right, like they're really strong in enterprise, but historically have not been strong in small and medium business versus, say, Google, for example. And so they'll have to expand down the market, right, to keep this growth number up. And they're obviously doing a pretty good job of it, or they wouldn't be able to keep up 20%, growth, for example, in an already gigantic business.
Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Yeah, it really
consumer is. Up 6% as well. That's more people clicking on subscribe on their Office iPad subscriptions and Office 365 Home and all that sort of stuff. That's incredible. And LinkedIn up 10% as well. So that's making plenty of money for them. I noticed that they also laid off about 1,000 people out of LinkedIn this last week or something along those lines.
Oh, is that just LinkedIn?
Yeah, about 1,000 people out of LinkedIn. Yeah. But there's more people laid off in total across Microsoft. They do these reorgs and they're running up to earnings, right? Right before the earnings announcement, they typically do layoffs. And so they sort of, get them out of the way as part of the reporting process and all that sort of stuff, which, it's harsh, but it's just the way it happens. But not huge, but a little bit of trimming and tightening up of things in a few different areas across the Microsoft business.
Gotcha.
At least that I've seen, yeah.
Some of the things that were interesting from this report, they were up 30%, or sorry, they surpassed $50 billion on commercial cloud revenues in their fiscal year 2020. That's the first time they've done that. So that's a big milestone. In terms of like how, what kind of an impact they think that some of this stuff has, some of the pandemic stuff maybe has had, they said they're seeing a number of small businesses are struggling. For example, they're not spending on IT purchases. Some small businesses like aren't spending because they're not even in existence anymore. They've gone under due to the commercial cloud. But they see that, overall business is still up, and they're just kind of, it's interesting to see what the impact has been from this, from the pandemic on them.
The interesting ones that stand out for me are around Xbox. Did you see that one?
I did not.
65% increase in Xbox content and services revenue.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of people sitting at home on the couch in the pandemic playing and buying games.
I can attest that that's going on in my house. So it's not me, but it's definitely going on in my house.
Crazy though, 65% up. That blew my mind. And Surface revenue up 28% as well, which I thought was pretty nice. It's people still buying devices. And the other really interesting one that you'd expect this to sort of be going down over time, but Windows OEM revenue is up 7%.
That was also a surprise to me. Yeah, I noticed that.
You'd think that'd be much smaller than that these days. But, you know, everybody's like, well, the death of Windows and all that, but doesn't seem to be dying all that quickly.
Well, here's what's interesting about it. So they had the Windows OEM Pro revenues. They were down 4% compared to Q4 a year ago because of weakness in the small business market. But not Windows OEM non-pro revenues. So like the personal, like Windows Home was up 34%. I think that, I mean, now you could, somebody could slice and dice this on here's the reason why that happened, but it kind of makes a little more sense too, because you got so many people who are now at home and they've had to maybe, I wonder how many people have gone out and had to buy new laptops. And we just, when we saw that we were going to be doing school or virtual school for my kids for the next year, I finally looked at it and was like, and I knew, you know, last year my wife and I were talking about how we needed to consider upgrading their laptops, because the more I thought about it, I'm like, oh, I see my son's laptop is almost 12 or 13 years old. My daughter's is over 10 years old and the keys are falling off. I went through, I got a new laptop. Son got my hand-me-down and my daughter got a refurbished MacBook Air, but we bought new machines because of that. Because of what's going on with this. So I wonder how many are doing that exact same thing. So
Yeah. And I think actually that's a good point. Hadn't thought about that. Nice. So some, really good numbers from Microsoft. Obviously, it's kind of earnings season. So we saw some numbers from other companies coming around, like the Tesla numbers, which we were both pretty happy about. Disclaimer, we're both stock owners. And pretty happy about that.
Happy stock owners, right? Yeah.
Stock owners, yes. Yeah. But good to see them making progress even in really difficult times, right?
It is. I mean, I've said this a couple of times on the show. Let's set aside just the fact that the pandemic, the personal side, the health side, let's set all that stuff aside just for a second. This is still one of the most interesting things to see how are certain companies affected both positively and negatively by this pandemic and how they're adjusting. The stories that are coming out of this, I find are very, very interesting. So now, there was another bit of news that is, this one's going to be a lot of, I say fun, but this is going to be really interesting to watch. You and I chatted a little bit about this yesterday. So
this has got a big bomb gone off.
Yeah. Yes. Now, Slack has done something big. Slack has filed an antitrust complaint against Microsoft in the European Union. In the European Union. The premise of their complaint is that Microsoft is using their monopoly power to bundle Microsoft Teams into their productivity suite, which Teams is frequently pitched as a competitor to Slack. Now, it's interesting because Slack has got a bit of a history on trying to compare themselves with Teams and saying how Teams isn't good and look at all the stuff they're doing and trying to play with numbers and everything, not play with numbers, trying to highlight numbers and focus on numbers when it comes to Teams versus Slack. This is going to be interesting to see how this goes, how Microsoft responds to this, and really what the fundamental complaint is from Slack against Microsoft about Teams to the European Union. It's going to be interesting to see this because European Union is a little more aggressive when it comes to anti-competitive behaviors. And so it'll be interesting to see how they approach this with Microsoft and how Microsoft responds to this. This is going to play out over the course of months. So this is going to be a fun one to watch.
If not years, You know, what I find, this is a serious topic, of course, but there's also sort of the lighter side of it, right? You often see the Slack CEO, Stuart Butterfield, I think his name is, coming out and saying, we don't compete with Microsoft. And then doing this with the EU, like, well, yeah, okay, sure you don't compete.
That's nice.
that's some nice marketing words there, buddy. Yeah. But yeah, your S1, which is your public IPO filing things, lists Microsoft as your number one competitor. So, yeah. But yeah, this is going to take a while to play out. Microsoft should take it seriously. They've been raked through the coals by the EU or in the EU before over stuff like this. I mean, just giving you a little personal anecdote, when I was working on the SharePoint team, we downed tools for 6 months during what was then WSS3, which would have been SharePoint 2010, I guess. Yeah, 2010. And
WSS3 is 2007.
Was it 2007?
Yeah, that was the big one for with features and solutions. That was okay. That was MOS 2007. 2010 was Sandbox.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, gosh, they all blur together. But during that, we downed tools for 6 months just to write documentation on all sorts of stuff. But it was to basically, as part of the EU antitrust stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mean documentation, it was like writing what we called protocol documentation at the time, right? Which was, we needed to make enough documentation so that somebody could replace SQL Server as part of the stack with something else, right? I mean, it was just asinine documentation. Like, nobody's ever going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is the sort of impact it can have if the EU take this seriously and ask Microsoft to do stuff to avoid being slapped. And so who knows, you know? Like, I think that one of their main complaints that they're saying here is that Microsoft are, you know, using their power of Office 365 to push Teams, right? And I was like, yeah, sure. I don't think anybody's denying that. But they also go on to say that they're force installing it for millions of people and blocking its removal. So what I think here is, you know, when you go and install Office, maybe not on a Mac, but on Windows, you install Office with click to run from Office 365, right? And it sort of streams all the bits down and it installs all the apps. And Teams is coming down with that and you can't get rid of it. I think you can't delete it out of that install process or something along those lines. And if you do, then it adds itself back. So it's got some sort of, so they're sort of picking on that installation process to say, well, hey, Microsoft's forcing this down users' throats.
Yeah, there's a legal side of that, and there's also the opinion side of that, you know, what you think is fair and not fair. So
yeah. I guess we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, they should take this seriously, but they're going to have a really hard time, I think, justifying or arguing that you can't bundle stuff together in a SaaS offering. That's going to be a tough one to prove, I think.
The article that we have linked here in the show notes from TechCrunch, it's been updated to provide a statement from Teams, from Microsoft and from Slack. I want to read just two sentences out of the Slack one and then one out of the Teams one. It just kind of shows how this is going to be really interesting. There's one of them's got kind of a, Slack has got more of a, Microsoft has a bit more of an arrogant kind of a response to them. So not arrogant, but kind of a, we're not worried. Yeah. So Slack says, we're confident that we're going to win. This is a quote. We're confident that we win on the merits of our product, but we can't ignore the illegal behavior that deprives customers of access to the tools and solutions they want. Slack threatens Microsoft's hold on business email, the cornerstone of Office, which means Slack threatens Microsoft's lock on enterprise software. He goes on. Now, Microsoft responded saying, we created Teams to combine the ability to collaborate with the ability to connect via audio because that's what people want. With COVID-19, the market has embraced Teams in record numbers while Slack has suffered from the efforts of video conferencing. We're committed to offering customers not only the best of new innovation, but a wide variety of choice on how they purchase and use the product. We look forward to providing additional information to the European Commission and answering any questions they've got or they have. So
there was a nice little knife twist in there about their absence of video conferencing. That's funny.
There's that part in the whole, like, European Commission's got some questions. We're happy to answer those questions.
We're happy to answer them, yeah. So, do you remember that line out of the presidential debates many years ago between Reagan and I can't remember who it was, where he said, I'm not going to look down on my opponent, or I'm not going to use my opponent's youth and inexperience against them, or something like that. It was just like that perfect, like, little, like, wee, there you go.
And this is going to be a fun one to watch. Fun in terms of like just tech entertaining. So I'm curious to see where this goes. Curious to see where the European Commission comes out of it. And I don't know. I mean, they've got an interesting approach to these topics that come up. So it'll be fun one to watch.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, there's more on Teams, I guess. Microsoft has, we'll link to an article in the Harvard Business Review. It's entitled Microsoft Analyzed Data on Its Newly Remote Workforce. So apparently, I think we've talked briefly about some of these findings that have been blogged about by, I think, Jared Spataro and various posts that they've made previously. But this article goes a bit more in depth about what Microsoft have been, some of the interesting data that have come out, that's come out of watching how Microsoft employees are collaborating and working with one another remotely. So, for example, one-on-one time increasing, or, you know, how many additional hours per week are being spent on this sort of stuff, change in the amount of time working overall, you know, because it's, you know, it's sort of mostly always available.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, though, Microsofties work basically the same hours, except they don't take a break for lunch.
Yeah, this article was, this was really interesting. It's part of a seven-part series. I found this really interesting because it shows how, not only how people are embracing it, but what's working and what's not working. And
yeah,
it was one of those articles, a really long article. You look at it going, there's probably some good info here, but I don't know if I'm going to take the time to read this. I'm glad I did take the time to read it. It said things like, a lot of people are, sorry if you hear the thunder in the background, we've got a big thunderstorm rolling in.
Oh, wow.
They said that people were avoiding more one-hour meetings and they were transitioning to much shorter 15 and 30-minute meetings. And the hypothesis was that there's less catching up with people in the hallway or at the water cooler or in the kitchen. So now they're doing that with these little, carving out little times to do it. And they're like, do we really need to have an hour-long meeting for this?
Yeah.
Another one of the findings I found really interesting was that managers who were checking in with employees more frequently on one-on-ones than managers who were not, the employees were able to get more done because they were able to stay focused and understanding what is the priority, what things are we supposed to be focused on right now, whereas you would normally get that from more of the vibe in the office. And so I found that one to be interesting as well. And then talking about, like, it also talked, it covered things about when people were texting or sending instant messages and when they were taking calls, it showed that their days were longer, but it showed, it, this was, as somebody who works from home exclusively, I found this part interesting, that people who work from home are, they're more likely to, or the Microsoft people were more likely to do, to work longer hours. But it's because during the day, they can take more breaks. They can take the dog for a walk. They can spend a little bit of time, make sure the kids are up and running with schoolwork or something. They can, all those kinds of things. I found those things to be, those interesting observations. Because, yeah, I do think I work more during the, as I, from working from home than I did before. But it's because I don't feel like I have like a much longer stint of working. I work for a couple hours. I take like an hour-long break, maybe go for a run, I feel like I have more flexibility than I did working in an office.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do too. It's interesting. Like, the length of meetings is curious because everybody sort of defaults to an hour, right? Like, when you create a meeting, you create it for an hour. And when you're not just walking around the office talking to people and getting those short things, then you got to take time to go catch up with people. And so shorter meetings, that doesn't surprise me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Another bit of news here from the, this is coming out also, coming out of the European Union as well, is that the European Union or a European Court of Justice or the European Court of Justice has effectively, they've kind of ruled against the United States. And they've effectively said, United States cloud services fundamentally are incompatible with European Union privacy laws.
Yeah, I saw that. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? Like,
okay.
I mean, I don't mean that facetiously. I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, there are a lot of, well, all the big cloud providers are all US-based. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. Like, is there going to be a European, big European cloud provider or whatnot, you know, come to the fold to take their place? I don't think so. It's just going to be, I'm not sure what will happen here.
There's a part of it that is, and I know that we have listeners all over the world, but I mean, from an American perspective, it's interesting to me, there are a lot of privacy rules and things that are in place in Europe that we don't have to deal with in the United States. There are some laws that California has their own thing. I would have thought that the United States would have gotten together and done something after the GDPR stuff went through in Europe. I thought that we might have seen something like that in the United States. We never did, or we have not yet. And that may be an instrument of the, or an effect of the current administration. But there are a lot of things that come up when it comes to like GDPR that I think that a lot of companies in the United States are just like, maybe the big companies have to deal with it, but the smaller companies are like, I don't care. And this is the way I do our, or this way I do our business. And if you don't like it, I mean, tough. Like for example, we had a company come to us recently that wanted to team up with us, with my company. And one of the things they sent across was this big GDPR document of all these things that I had to agree to. And I looked at it and I'm like, so what kind of volume are you talking about? Because there's a lot of stuff here that I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to sign it. And they're like, oh, no, you have to agree to all this stuff. And I'm like, well, one thing just to be clear, this part here that says that you're going to walk into my company and anytime you want to be able to run an audit, that ain't going to happen. And he's like, well, you have to do that if you do business with us. And I'm like, I get that Europeans have to do that, but we're not, we don't have to deal with that. And if you're not, unless you're coming to me and saying, I'm going to spend a ridiculous amount of money with a bunch of customers, like, well, okay, now I might bend over backwards for you. But
So this, is it worth doing the business?
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to, right?
This one's going to be interesting because I remember seeing this pop up in a bunch of my, friends in the United States, or sorry, in the European Union, were in Europe, were all like, ah, you know, here's all the issues that we have with this and how it's going to impact stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, like you said, what are you going to do about it? Because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't mean that sort of tongue in cheek. It's like, well, cool. So you're going to switch services? Like what, you know, going to go elsewhere to get your cloud computing?
So
I guess you might, right? But is there are there other choices? I mean, out of the big three, right?
Yeah. Well, so think about it like this. So for somebody listening that's going, is this really going to affect me? There are a lot of different pieces to this, right? And I'm just going to pick one out that this article that we're linking to highlights. It does a good job of highlighting this. Did you know that when you use Outlook for Office for the web, Microsoft sends personal data and... Now, when you say what is personal data, that's a little, I don't know. There's personal data and then there's data that can identify you and then there's stuff that's just like data that's generated from when you're using it. Some stuff isn't.
I mean, you're logging into one of their services. They already know who you are.
Yeah. Well, here's one of the things about it. Microsoft sends personal data to two American companies that are not what are considered, quote, data processors, specifically Optimizely and Giphy, because I want to use GIFs in my... And my emails.
Emails, yeah.
Microsoft is also going to, is from the mobile Office app, Microsoft sends data to, or sends traffic to six companies. Four of them are not what GDPR calls data processors. It's more prevalent than you think it is.
Are we going to end up with like a Windows N, like an Outlook N, you know, with all the media capabilities removed to meet these things? I'm not sure. Surely at some point, users have got to go, yeah, but this is also a pain in the butt. So
kind of give people the options.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we'll have to see what happens there between Slack and Azure not being so compatible with EU privacy laws. There might be an interesting couple of years of EU news here.
Exactly, yeah. This last one that we did, the Slack one, I think that'll get resolved. This last one, though, is kind of, it's more to me kind of looking at European Union like, so what are you going to do about it? Because it's not like you've already gone with GDPR and people are GDPR compliant, but now you're saying... things aren't, so it's like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I guess we'll stay tuned for more info on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, on to some Teams news. A couple of things. First one is news this week that Teams is opening itself up to third-party apps during meetings. So you know how Teams capabilities in the past were sort of development capabilities were limited to basically tabs, extensions, and bots. Basically,
mm-hmm.
Now they're taking this to the next stage, which is now your tab effectively can participate in a meeting. So when you're in a meeting, you can bring up a third-party application, which I actually think is going to be really useful. I don't know, as an app developer, one of the biggest things missing was the ability to participate in meetings like this, right? Like you couldn't add your UI into a meeting and help, you know, use it as part of the meeting. I mean, you can see what the scenarios are that come out of this, but being able to have your apps effectively participate in meetings now and have some of your UI show up and all that sort of stuff does bring a whole bunch of new flexibility, which I think a lot of ISVs have been waiting for. So this is another nail in the Slack and Zoom compete bucket. Nail in the... that doesn't work. Nail in the Slack and Zoom compete coffin. There you go. You know, whereas those don't offer... extension capabilities for apps to participate in their meetings. Like you can't add something to a Zoom meeting, for example, that I know of.
Yeah.
And so this brings a lot of interesting flexibility. Things like, you know, you're having a call with a customer and it being able to CRM information to be able to come up during the meeting or help augmenting the meeting. You know, it could be stuff out of your parts database or out of your ordering system or whatever with that customer. So I think it's pretty nice to see. Again, this is, I'm amazed at the speed at which Teams is moving at the moment, especially under current circumstances, that they're just they're smashing features out left, right, and center.
They really are. They really are. This one is going to be, I mean, there's the different play of, you know, what different ISVs are going to, what they're going to build to incorporate things into Teams meetings. I can see some real use cases or some opportunities that people could take advantage of when you look at using Teams for like a conferencing solution. I don't mean like video conference. I mean like delivering like a remote conference. So delivering sessions and presentations and stuff like that. And not so much of an interactive experience, but what kind of an experience they can provide, not only for the presenter, but also for the consumer of the content as well. And then taking that one step further, what about in the education space? I mean, I know that I would really, I've got some ideas on things that I would like to do to be able to use Teams for delivering a course, or not just maybe delivering like a workshop, and a couple of different ideas there. And so that's neat that you can be able to do this. They're, like you said, they're, I'm curious to check out this feature that they announced, what, like a week or two or three ago, this together mode where you can see everybody that looks like they're in a conference, like an auditorium or something.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. The screenshots and the little demos, that they look interesting. But holding a real meeting with that, I mean, am I going to see like 50 people trying to talk at the same time? And it's like, instead of it being an auditorium where everyone's kind of looking at a stage, is it really more like a bowl where everyone's in an auditorium? They're all looking at each other and talking. Like, I wouldn't want to be in a meeting like that.
Yeah. You know, I wonder where the processing happens as well. Mm. Like, I wonder if it's all happening on your local machine. Where, so, like,
I just imagined a meeting starting on my laptop fan just going crazy right away.
Totally. Totally. I mean, it's bad enough as it is, right? But yeah, whether it's removing all the backgrounds locally and then knitting you all together in something else, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Like, I guess some people will pick it apart and find out, but yeah. There's one more piece of news here from Teams, some news that came out this week. I think it was as part of Virtual Ignite that's currently going on, right?
Inspire.
I'm not really tuning in. Sorry, Inspire, yes. I'm not really tuning in this week. I'll go read the news next week. But one thing I thought was interesting is this new thing called Microsoft DataFlex, which is a new sort of database type capability that's being brought to Teams. And what I understand is that this is CDS, the Common Data Service, mm-hmm. being rebranded from, you know, Dynamics and that sort of thing, and being brought into Teams apps so that you've got a data store for your Teams apps that you build, which I guess makes it easier with, like, when you're building Power Apps or applications for Teams and you need a data store behind the scenes. It's kind of one of those, it's definitely in the low-code, no-code space. It's, you know, so you don't have to go provision a SQL server to go store your stuff. DataFlex is like another service that's available to you to go store your data from your applications as you go build them out. But my understanding is that it's CDS behind the scenes.
The statement in this article says that Microsoft officials describe DataFlex as being built atop the Common Data Service and as the new name for the Common Data Service. So I'm not sure if it's built on top of it or if it's just, or if it's like a replacement for it.
I think it's a replacement.
It looks like a replacement for it. We'll have to get somebody on the show to come talk to us about this.
Well, not an actual physical replacement, but like a, it's a marketing term, replacement. It is CDS, I think.
Oh, nope. There you go. And so how's this tie in with Teams? Cut to Inspire this week. DataFlex is the official new name for CDS in Teams. DataFlex Pro is the new name for CDS itself. So DataFlex is going to be CDS in Teams, where DataFlex Pro is a thing all by itself.
Gotcha. So it's CDS. Gotcha.
Yeah.
CDS with two ways to buy it. The free version in Teams or the paid version. The pro version, got it.
Today, in 3 months, there'll be another licensing model. I mean, it's coming from the Power Apps, like in the Power Apps group, right?
They have exactly the greatest track record of screwing up pricing. Yeah, interesting.
They flip-flop more on licensing than politicians do on policies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's quite accurate.
I guess they've been pretty stable for a while, but anyway.
Yeah, well, they pissed everybody off. They've got to stop for a bit.
Didn't stop them before. Anyway, hey, why don't we start wrapping up, but let's first do some picks before we leave everybody.
Perfect.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. Mr. Johnson, do you have a pick from the remote area vacationing spot of Oregon?
I do. It's got nothing to do with Bend or Oregon.
Awesome.
But it's a post I came across on Reddit sometime back that I bookmarked, where a guy dove on the wreck of U352, which is a U-boat. And the reason I picked this is I have an interest in U-boats, right, and submarines and all that sort of stuff. And so I started reading this guy's posts, and you can go dive on some of these wrecks around the world of U-boats that were sunk. U-352 sunk off North Carolina during World War II. So you can go dive it. It's in a depth that makes it accessible-ish. But the photos this guy took are really interesting. It's in pretty good, surprisingly good condition for a World War II wreck. Now, what I found really interesting is I replied to this guy and said, oh, I've always wanted to go and dive the wreck of another U-boat, U-1105, I believe it is. Yes, 1105, which was nicknamed by the US Black Panther, which was a U-boat that was covered in sort of a rubber-type substance trying to evade sonar. And the reason that I find this one really interesting is it's at the mouth of the Potomac that was sunk after World War II. It was given to the US after the Brits took it, or it was surrendered to the British, and it was sunk in the mouth of the Potomac eventually. But what's interesting is I have a photo that my grandfather took of U-1105 surrendering. He was in the Air Force, in the Royal Air Force, and I've got a black and white photo he took out of the window of a Sunderland flying boat with a U-1105 flying the white flag. And I've always wanted to... My grandmother gave me this photo, actually a series of U-boat surrender photos that my grandfather took. She gave them to me before she died. And I've wanted to go dive on U-1105, which is not a great dive. Like, apparently the visibility is absolutely terrible, but it's at the mouth of the Potomac, so I wanted to go check it out.
That is too cool.
Sort of complete the circle. Yeah. Okay, one slight diversion. This will blow your mind. So a lot of the U-boats surrendered in the Atlantic, and they went up in convoy up to a lock in Scotland where they were handed over, mm-hmm. right? They were escorted and then handed over. So in this particular case, this U-boat was handed over to a ship called the HMS Conn, C-O-N-N, which you'll be interested to know that our good friend Ryan Duguid's grandfather was on during the surrender of this U-boat. So Ryan, who's a really good friend of mine since we met at university, his grandfather was also involved in the surrender of this U-boat. So it feels only fitting that I go find it one day.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, very
cool.
Anyway,
long story short, some underwater U-boat photos.
That's cool, man. That's for good find. Good find, yeah. Good story.
What do you got for us this week?
Nothing as personal or interesting.
Okay.
I've been working on redoing my company website. Not been happy with what I've had for a while. And it was enough to one of those, like, you know, it got the job done, but it's really been holding back a lot of stuff that I've wanted to do. And honestly, kind of screwed up too when I built the site the first time in a crash sense. It was built to sell one course. Now that course is done and I want to do another course. So now I'm kind of in this predicament of, do I build the course and then update the site or fix the site to be able to hoard two courses, or do I fix the site and then work on the course? And
yeah.
Decided to take a break from building courses and I'm working on the site. So instead of hiring somebody else out to do this, which I originally was going to do, I took some time, looked around and said, I really want something that is going to make, that I'm going to be able to maintain. And I want it to be nice and simple. I love the idea of keeping it in Hugo. And then I was like, I need a way to go through and to implement the UI. And so I was going to do what we did for our podcast and just hire somebody to go build a UI for it and knock it out. But then there's, you know, when it comes to CSS, I'm like walking around with like no fingers on my hands. I'm just kind of like banging around. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Such a great way to describe it, because that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I know that there are times when I'm going to want to fix something or do something. I can't do it. There's libraries out there or tools out there like Bootstrap and different things out there that you can go use. And I found this one, and I can't remember where I found it, but I found this one that had been around for not a long time, but it's relatively recent, but it's been around long enough to where you can have confidence in it. It's called Tailwind CSS.
Yeah.
They pitch it as a utility-first CSS framework for rapidly building custom designs. And it's very much like a Bootstrap, where you've got classes that you can use and apply them, and you don't have to worry about the cross-browser kind of BS that you got to deal with. But it makes things, it's very responsive, and it's done in a way that makes it's very easy for a developer to understand. Kind of goes off my pick last week about no dev tools or no design yeah. tools for developers. And what I liked about this too is that there is the guys that got behind this and came up with Tailwind to help fund it, because it's an open source thing, to help fund Tailwind, they created this thing called Tailwind UI. And they've got two sections of Tailwind UI. It is their commercial components that they've built. You pay a certain amount for in preview right now. It's a very affordable price. I think $250 for both of them. One is for marketing components and one is for admin UI components. And all it is you just go, they've taken HTML, they've applied their CSS from the Tailwind CSS library to it. And so it's like, here's a couple different headers you can choose from. And you choose from all these different headers. Like, I want that. Grab that HTML, drop it into your site. It's got all the classes and stuff done. You go and fill in the content, done. And I am floored at how productive I've been in implementing a new UX for the Voitanos website. And I love it. And I've been working on this now for only about 4 days. And I'll send you a link if you want to take a look at it. This one hasn't been updated in like 2 or 3 days here. But if you go, I'll drop this link in our chat here and you can see it. So curious, get your response. Go to the blog section. That's the one that I've been focused on to really define the layout. But it's simple. It's simple. It's clean. I don't have to worry too much about too much stuff. I found a site to take my orange and blue colors for the Voitanos theme and just said, apply these, and now everywhere I say orange and blue, it just used different shades of it. So it's really slick.
That's great. Nice. Like UI for noobs, I'm all for that. Like, I hate CSS.
It's UI with like the equivalent of color by number.
Yeah.
The way it feels like. I mean, I'm able to just copy and paste to drop them in all on Hugo, and I'm surprised at how fast I've been able to get stuff done. So
nice.
Yeah.
That looks really cool. Oh, good pick.
So those are our picks for the week. Mr. Johnson, I hope you enjoy the rest of your vacation this week.
Yeah, I got a couple of days. I think we're going to go for a float down the river today. It should be nice.
Very nice. Well, based on the storm I'm getting right now, I may be floating down my driveway in just a minute, so.
I'll be thinking of you. Send me a photo if you end up tubing down your driveway.
I can do that. Cool, man. Well, I will talk to you next week, and to our listeners, we will see you next week.
Sounds good.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.